already. It is 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. You've got it tuned to KHUM. Joining me on the phone this morning, we've got Lori Dingler. How you doing, Lori?
Good morning. I'm enjoying looking out at the frosty morning and being warm inside.
Yes.
And I hope everyone else is feeling warm as well.
Yes, indeed. I am looking out the K-Home into the world on very frosty roofs and lawns, and it's 30 degrees outside and nice and toasty in here. So the reason we've got you on, of course, is there have been a whole series of earthquakes off of Cape Mendocino. A swarm, as it's often called. We've got a whole bunch of them that took place in just the past few days. What do you make of that?
Well, it turns out that area off the coast of Petrolia and Cape Mendocino is the single most seismically active part of the contiguous 48 states.
Isn't that special?
It's special.
It's a triple junction, they call it, right?
Right. It's beautiful and it's special. And one of the reasons that the coast is so spectacular in that area is because of the geology. And it's what we call a triple junction region, where three big plates of the Earth's outer surface, the North American plate that you and I all live atop of, the Pacific plate, and the Gorda plate all come and meet in the general vicinity of Cape Mendocino. Now, you look at a map and it looks like a point, but it's really much more of a region. So if you kind of imagine maybe a 20-mile circle centered on Cape Mendocino and Petrolia, that would be a better way to visualize the triple junction, because it has really been chewed up, and it's been stressed for many millions of years, and there are all kinds of faults and folds in that particular vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not at all surprising to have large earthquakes in that area.
Yeah, we've
Anyone
had plenty.
Who was here 26 years ago experienced the Cape Mendocino earthquake sequence with a 7.2, and then a 6.6 and a 6.7, all within about 15 hours of each other. So,
yeah, that was just amazing. That was shortly before I moved up here, and we were actually on the phone with someone up here when one of those three hit, and it was pretty amazing. Those were very large quakes, caused a lot of damage.
They were very memorable. And the first thing I want to say is that there's nothing about this current sequence that says another sequence like that is either more or less likely to happen. So we always have a high likelihood, a real likelihood of strong earthquakes, not just from the Cape Mendocino area, but also other faults in our area. But what happened over the weekend doesn't change the probabilities. It doesn't mean, oh, one's going to happen this afternoon or one's going to happen in 3 years. Basically, it was an interesting blip in the story. Nothing about those earthquakes suggests that they're a precursor to something bigger really soon, but my caveat is something bigger really soon is always a possibility here on the North Coast.
So there is a lot of people feel that when there's a lot of small quakes like this, that it helps relieve pressure. Is there anything to that, or does it increase pressure, or there's nothing to that either way?
Oh, if only that were the case. Unfortunately, earthquakes are our way of measuring earthquake scale, which is an arbitrary human invention that we call magnitude. We don't call it Richter magnitude anymore. His was a good idea, but his magnitude is obsolete. We have different ways of measuring magnitude now. But his general idea that each number, as you went up one, was logarithmic. So if you go from a 3 to a 4, that's about 32 times more energetic in terms of energy. If you go from a 3 to a 5, that's close to 1,000 times more energetic. You go from 3 to a 6, about 27,000 times. Now, you can kind of see where I'm going. How many 3s would it take to get rid of the energy building up for a magnitude 9? Well, that number would be so big it would almost take the whole interview to read it out. In terms of magnitude 5s, we'd have to have about 5 magnitude 5 earthquakes every day for nearly 500 years.
Oh, boy.
To release the energy that's building up for that big one. So the short answer is no. Little earthquakes really don't do anything as far as releasing that energy. But what they do an important function, which is they get people like us to talk about them. And hopefully that will inspire some of you out there to take some actions to prepare. Because when it comes to earthquakes, what you've done beforehand really can make a huge difference, both in terms of reducing injuries while the ground is shaking, and in terms of how comfortable you are in the days and weeks afterwards when you may be isolated without access to food, water, transportation, communication, and so forth.
That's a very good point. And there are simple things like just bolting down your bookcases to the walls.
Right.
Very simple,
right,
but make a big difference. I've had bookcases fall. We actually had went back in 1995 when there was that Eureka quake. We had a bookcase actually fall right on us on our bed. And I was like, okay, there's a lesson learned.
Yeah, that's that's no fun.
No.
And not only can it hurt you, but it means that your energies are diverted into dealing with injured people or cleaning up the mess when perhaps you'd like to be doing something else. In your case, you'd like to perhaps be reporting on what's happening.
Right.
And, you know, if your studio is in shambles, you have a really hard time doing that.
That is true. Now, the 1992 series of quakes, like around 7.2, that's a very, very large quake. There's no doubt about that. But pales in significance to what is potentially out there. And we're talking about a subduction zone quake. And
right,
we live in an area where they occur every, say, approximately every 300 years. It's been about 300 years since we've had one. They don't work like clockwork, but a quake like that, we are talking in the magnitude of like 8 or 9, correct?
Yeah, and first let me step back. Let's not talk about them every 300 years.
Okay.
The average recurrence of those 9s is probably closer to 500 years, but they can be as close together as 200 and as far apart as 800 or 1,000. And so, we humans love patterns.
Yes,
and
we do.
So we want to hang our hat on that 300-year or 500-year and say, yes, it's overdue, no, it's not overdue. It is a likely event in our lifetimes, especially our children's lifetimes. So probably our next strong earthquake on the North Coast won't be that big Cascadia earthquake. It will probably be something similar to what we had in 1980, 1992, 1922. Where we had a very similar earthquake to the Cape Mendocino earthquake. That was not just a one-timer. But we could have that Cascadia earthquake this afternoon. So preparing for the big one will prepare you for everything else. It will also prepare you for wildland fires, for floods, storms. It turns out the things you need to do to be prepared to be on your own, self-sufficient, reduce hazards, make an emergency plan, all of those things that you do for a really big earthquake will actually stand you in good stead for a lot of other things as well.
Now, one thing that I want to touch on is is kind of getting a guessing the magnitude when it is happening. It's not necessarily how strong it is, because the one that happened yesterday in Cutton, my family felt really strongly. It was a very small earthquake, and it was very nearby, but it was also very quick. So from what I understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you can kind of, I guess, kind of guess magnitude by how long the shaking is lasting. Is that correct?
Absolutely. You can become a seismologist by getting into the habit of counting how long the shaking lasts. Counting is useful for two reasons. One, as soon as you start counting, you're giving your brain something else to do other than feel really frightened. And so it helps really calm that adrenaline rush. But the other thing it does is allows you to have a handle on, are we talking about a magnitude 3, 4, or 5 really close by, or are we talking about a much bigger earthquake? And it turns out that if anyone had had the presence of mind to count that little earthquake near Cutton, it was at about 10:20 a.m. in the morning. By the time you thought to start counting, the shaking probably would have been over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it only lasted seconds. And it was sharp because it was shallow and it was really close to Cutton and Eureka, and a lot of people felt it really sharply. But as soon as you got to Trinidad, you probably didn't feel it anymore. And I didn't feel it here in McKinleyville, even though I was sitting at my desk writing up about earthquakes, thinking about earthquakes, I didn't feel it. So if you had been here back in 92, and I was here in this same house, and I did get into the habit of counting, and I counted a duration of 75 seconds.
Wow.
For that 7.2. Now, it wasn't all strong. The last 30, 40 seconds were very gentle swaying, but it was very clear to me once I got to a count of about 30, okay, in fact, what was going through my mind was, okay, this is a 4, this is a 5, this is a 6, this is getting close to a 7. And so, you know, I wasn't right on, but I was pretty close. In fact, it was a Saturday, it was a lovely day, and we were about to go on a picnic, and I informed my family, no picnic. In fact, what I'm doing is going out to the front lawn, and I laid down on the grass in a nice, a safe spot so that I could feel aftershocks.
Oh, boy.
Because I knew there would be aftershocks. And there's really nothing quite like being in a nice, open, safe place and being able to feel all of those earth vibrations and really enjoy them.
So anytime we have a quake of around that magnitude, you still have to start worrying about tsunami, correct?
Well, absolutely. As soon as your brain says, hey, this is beginning to feel long, then that is your signal that if you're in a tsunami hazard zone, you need to, as soon as the shaking abates enough so that you can safely move, you need to grab your children, grab your preparedness pack that hopefully you've kept by the door, and immediately head to head inland to higher ground, away from the coast, and hopefully you have practiced evacuating ahead of time so that everyone in your family knows exactly what to do.
Well, luckily, we live in Cutton, as you're saying, and that's well above the
Cutton,
tsunami zone.
And that's actually an important point, because we don't want people over-evacuating. The problem, evacuation poses hazards. In the aftermath of a big earthquake, you have aftershocks, tree limbs can fall, power lines can fall. You're much safer in your home if your home is in a safe area. So
check your elevation.
Out. Yeah, it's really important to know if you're in the zone or not. And fortunately, Humboldt County and Del Norte County have both been very proactive about putting signs out. And so pretty much any road that's heading to the beach, you'll see an entering or a leaving a tsunami hazard zone sign.
That's correct.
And that will be your visual clue as to where you need to get to in order to be safe. Now, you don't have to stand right by the sign. You are allowed to go a few blocks further in if you feel more comfortable, but you certainly don't need to get in a car and try to drive to Neyland. You're actually putting yourself and your family at much greater risk by doing so.
That's a good point.
All of those signs are based on what we consider the worst credible tsunami threat, which is that big magnitude 9 Cascadia earthquake.
Right.
If it's an asteroid, the signs are probably not high enough. But if it's
don't
an asteroid,
you'll
have a few other problems.
A few other things to worry about. So, again, the length is the thing to be looking for your quick clue as to how big it
length.
Is.
And don't split hairs and go, well, was that really long enough from what Lori was saying? Or is it not? As soon as you start wondering, our motto is, when in doubt, drill it out.
Right. So if you are in a tsunami zone, then be, you know.
Yeah, treat it as a drill. And if there's no tsunami, you can all feel proud that, hey, we've practiced what to do, and in the next event, we will know exactly what to do.
Now, I've got first-hand experience, not first, I guess second-hand experience. I've got a good friend who was living in Anchorage, Alaska in 1964, who described what that quake was. That was a subduction zone quake. It was, I believe, a 9.2. I think it's the largest quake on record, at least nearby anyway. And she said that it lasted so long that it actually got less scary. It was like, oh, this is our new reality. It's going to go on forever. That's how long it lasted. She doesn't know how long it was, but it was enormous. It lasted forever, it seemed like. That quake was just on and on. Do you know how long that thing lasted?
Well, I actually have a recording that someone made in his home in Anchorage, and we have a link to it. I can send that to you. It's not great quality recording, but in that recording, the shaking lasts for more than 3 minutes, and the strong shaking lasts for about a minute and a half. It's really pretty impressive because you can hear the whole house groaning and kind of things crashing down. But the important lesson of that recording, here's this fellow in a home in Anchorage experiencing the second largest earthquake we've ever recorded in modern times. So only the 9.5 1960 Chile earthquake was bigger.
Got it.
And yes, lots of things are falling and crashing. But he keeps his wits about him. He's definitely frightened, and you can tell from the recording that he's frightened. He's hyperventilating. He's talking about how frightened he is. But he actually makes some good decisions, and he's fine. And almost everybody in Anchorage was fine. I mean, one of the bottom lines about the 64 earthquake is that there were only 9 deaths related to ground shaking. And those were in an area, primarily in an area where there was liquefaction and landslides.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much everybody sitting in homes like I'm sitting in right now, back in 64, back before they had really strict earthquake codes, survived that earthquake just fine. And our area is not that different from the Alaska area. We live in wood frame homes. Some of them, if they're not secured to foundations, will bounce off their foundations, and that can be expensive. But they don't kill people in catastrophic collapses. The main cause of death in 64 was the tsunami.
That's right.
And that's...
Ask anyone in Crescent City.
Yeah, I mean, and it wasn't just in Alaska. So about 130 deaths due to the tsunami, about 9 deaths due to ground shaking. So whenever we talk about a really big earthquake, we have to talk about both the shaking and the tsunami. And it's, we can never focus on one more than the other. So clearly, if you're at the beach or in a tsunami zone, as soon as that shaking feels long to you, that's your key to immediately evacuate to high ground. One of the really good things about both Humboldt and Del Norte counties is that the overwhelming majority of our areas have high ground fairly nearby.
True.
I mean, there are a few areas that are problematic, and one of them is certainly the Samoa Peninsula, mm-hmm. especially near Fairhaven, and we're working on getting funding to get a vertical evacuation structure built in the Fairhaven area. But Fairhaven is really an exception to there being no high ground that you can get to nearby. In general, we really are lucky, but that luck only works if people are aware that the shaking is the warning. Nobody's going to set off a siren in that big earthquake. Nobody's going to come and knock on your door and say, hey, you need to start evacuating, because you might only have 10 minutes from the time that earthquake starts to the arrival of the first surges along our coast. So time is of the essence, but I can assure you that we can do it, because in 2004, the little community of Langi, which is a village off the coast of Banda Aceh, Sumatra, it was the town closest to the epicenter of that 9.1 December 26th Indonesian earthquake. Those people had an oral tradition that when the ground shakes for a long time, you immediately head to high ground. So this particular village, 8 minutes between the start of the earthquake and the arrival of the first surge, unlike the poor people in Banda Aceh that had no awareness of the tsunami threat, these villagers all knew immediately to grab their children, put Granny in the garden cart, and head to high ground. And of the 1,000 or so residents of Langi Village, not a single man, woman, or child died in that tsunami, even though the water heights were 30 to 45 feet high, and they had only 8 minutes between the start of the shaking and the arrival of the surges.
That is a really good thing to point out, because depending on if we have the subduction zone quake here, depending on, and that zone is very long. It can either be right off our coast or you know, up towards Washington. So it's a very long area, depending on where the actual slip takes place.
Well, to get a magnitude 9 earthquake, the slip takes place along the whole zone.
Does it really? Okay.
We're talking about a 650-mile-long
wow.
rupture that's probably 50 miles wide. Now, the rupture might start here in Humboldt County. It might start up on Vancouver Island, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. I suspect my bet would be Humboldt County, but maybe that's just my own bias. But the rupture is, it's that epicenter is like a rock hitting your windshield. It's where the crack starts. And then the crack proceeds to grow from, let's say it starts near Cape Mendocino, then it grows all the way up north to Vancouver Island. Maybe it starts in the north and grows down. Maybe it starts in the middle and grows in both directions. But the bottom line is that everyone from Humboldt County to British Columbia is going to feel strong shaking. And that entire coastline is going to have a threat of a tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, the threat of the tsunami will be throughout the Pacific Basin. One of the ways we know about the last great Cascadia earthquake is from the written records in Japan that make it very clear that an orphan tsunami, a tsunami that arrived without feeling the shaking, occurred on January 26, 1700. Wow. So in 2011, we got the orphan tsunami here in California because we got the tsunami in Fort Bragg, in Crescent City, and elsewhere on the West Coast
from Japan.
Without feeling the shaking because the magnitude 9 earthquake was in Japan. In 1700, the opposite happened. The magnitude 9 earthquake was here, but the tsunami was still large enough to cause damage in Japan.
There we go. Well, lots of good lessons here. We're running out of time, but I guess the upshot is here, since we're talking about quakes, be prepared. We do live in earthquake country. You know the drill. Understand that if you know, bookcases need to be bolted down. Understand that if you are living in a low-lying tsunami zone, know what your escape route is in advance. If you aren't in a tsunami zone and you do feel a long quake, stay put. Don't panic.
And I really do encourage people to make sure that they sign up for Humboldt Alert. So when the tsunami comes from far away or we have potential flood or fire situations, call the Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services to make sure, or go online, Humboldt Alert. You can just Google it. Make sure that you're signed up. Request a copy of our Living on Shaky Ground magazine. It's free. You can just leave a message at 707-826-6019. Do what you can do now to be prepared.
Excellent. Lori, thank you so much for taking the time and giving us a very comprehensive look at life here on the North Coast in earthquake country.
Well, thank you, Cliff, and be safe.
I will, and thank you very much. Take care.
Uh-huh.
All right, that is Lori Dingler, our resident expert on earthquakes, with her thoughts on the current swarm and just earthquakes in general. Upshot, be prepared.